to talk about that game and look ahead to the future for K-State this season is Brian Smoller, director of PowerCat Vision, K-State HDTV. You've probably seen him here recently on television with the opening game of the year. He's the voice of K-State women's basketball. He's a Mr. Do Everything for Kansas State University, and he joins us here today on the Sports Ticket. Brian, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, Wade. Good to talk with you.
As always, with you as well. Let's jump right in. K-State, disappointing loss. I know you and I were texting a little bit back and forth last week, and you were really concerned about this game with Vanderbilt, and rightfully so, as it turned out. Why were you so concerned with that ball game?
Well, I think it was the, I don't want to say a classic trap game, because that would make it sound like K-State was unprepared or not ready for what they were going to experience, and I don't think that was the case. I think it was more, the assumption was that Vanderbilt was the same old Vanderbilt, and, you know, when the game was scheduled a few years ago, that certainly would have been the case. But as we know, everything in football and college football is cyclical, and Vanderbilt under fourth-year coach Derek Mason seems to have hit an uptick and playing as good a football as they've played since James Franklin was there, the former K-State assistant that's now at Penn State. And I don't know, it was just a feel, I think, perhaps leading into the week, that momentum was on the side of Vanderbilt. If you flip the card and look at it from their standpoint, they're going into a very difficult stretch with Alabama coming up this week, the week after K-State, and it kicks off the K-State game kicked off four straight ranked opponents. So if you look at it from their perspective, having number 18 K-State come into their place, that's a game that they probably emotionally are ready to go, to get that kicked off and get the respect card, so to speak. There were a lot of things playing in their favor. And then on top of that, schematically, they had a very good front seven, one that was sold out to stop the run. It was going to put a lot of pressure on K-State. And I thought going into the game that it would come down to K-State was a better offensive team than Vanderbilt and would have an opportunity to win the game via defense, special teams, and then offensive big plays. And as it turned out, too many drops and a couple of mistakes on those big plays by defense and special teams wiped out what could have been a much different game.
Yeah, that's the thing. They did have a defensive touchdown, which was pretty controversial for most K-State fans. And as I saw it on television, I didn't think there was enough to overturn the ruling on the field that they already had, which was a touchdown. Then the punt return touchdown negated by a penalty. I think a lot of K-State fans feel the way that I did after watching the game, is that Vanderbilt's a nice team. They're a good defensive team. They're nothing special offensively. But that Kansas State it was more about K-State losing this game than Vanderbilt winning it. Is that fair or unfair?
No, I think that's an accurate statement. I think the only thing about Vanderbilt that you would say now looking back on it is we're early in the season, but the SEC to this point seems to be a jumbled mess beyond Alabama and maybe Georgia, but Georgia's playing with a young quarterback, a freshman, so you're not quite sure how they'll progress. So in hindsight, Vanderbilt may be a team, especially on their side on the East Division, may be in the mix over there on the East side with Georgia and Florida and Tennessee for that division title. Now, all that said, I think you're absolutely right. I think K-State, and rightfully so, has every right to feel that they gave away that game. I mean, 17 points were on the board and came off, so to speak. You know, how often does McCrane miss a field goal? Not very often. Mm-hmm. He's the most accurate kicker nearly in K-State history. And you have the touchdown for defense and special teams. K-State has the most non-offensive touchdowns since 1999. That's how they win games. And it's unfortunate those things happen. The review, yes, it didn't go their way. But because of some other mistakes that they made on the offensive side, it heightened the mistakes made on those big plays. If you do enough, if you catch the ball on the offensive side, which you just played the comment from Coach Snyder, you make catches, the defensive touchdown that was erased and the special teams touchdown that was erased, yes, they hurt, but they don't become as big of an issue because you're moving the ball on offense and you likely are scoring points on the offensive side.
What was the most alarming thing for you? Was it all the drops by the receivers, or was there something that really stood out to you more than others?
No, I think it was unquestionably the drops. The wide receiver group has come in, ballyhooed, and rightfully so, with a lot of young, experienced guys finally into their third year with the program, or second year in the case of Byron Pringle. You had seen through two games the emergence of a young man like Dalton Schoen, Isaiah Harris, had felt like, boy, that position may be as deep as it's ever been at K-State with quality wide receivers. And to see them not succeed, not just one guy, but across the board that badly on a big stage was alarming. And I think Bill Snyder alluded to that in his media conference, the media teleconference yesterday. I'm sure today at his press conference he'll be asked and allude to it again, that they'll have a lot of work to do in the off week, because that, from a position of strength, he called it yesterday that they went back to square one, which is never what you want to hear the coach say. But that's kind of what it felt like. It felt like you went from, boy, that's one of the best units maybe in the country, as deep as they are now, to, man, really, how good were we at wide receiver? And that's a huge concern moving into the next phase of your season, which is the Big 12, where you got to score points. I mean, you may not face a defense like Vanderbilt the rest of the year, but you have to be able to score with the offenses that you're going to see in the Big 12.
We'll come back to the offense in a moment, but I want to focus on one of the positives in the loss to Vanderbilt, and that was the defense. Certainly the defense did enough for this team to win, and it's kind of interesting because going into the season, I think a lot of people thought that defense is more of a concern than the offense, and it was completely the opposite at Vanderbilt.
I think the defense was by far and away the best part of that game. Front seven played great. Trey Deshaun and Will Gary, Reggie Walker were forces. And for K-State to be successful, you look back to 2012, you look back to last season, the way K-State led the league in defense was because of their front four, allowed them to play a base defense and be able to either pull a safety up into the box to stop the run or help out in coverage with their man-to-man on the outside. And it all is symbiotic, right? You have to have pressure on the quarterback to allow your corners to be able to be out on the island and play one-on-one and have time to and not have it break down. The first two games against competition nowhere near Vanderbilt's level, K-State was having a hard time getting pressure on the quarterback without a blitz. To see Reggie Walker become the Reggie Walker we saw last year, I mean, they couldn't stop him without holding him. He was held on the touchdown play
yes,
by Kyle Shermer when he came into the end zone. To see that Reggie Walker, along with the force, the wrecking force that Trey Deshaun, the sophomore D tackle, along with Will Gary, were inside, that is huge and encouraging moving forward for K-State. And I thought the linebackers, outside of that early drive where they had some defensive breakdowns, the long 80-plus yard drive for Vanderbilt, after that, I thought Trent Tanking and Jade Kirby and Elijah Sullivan played very well at linebacker for K-State, and often in three linebacker sets. So, yes. Big step up for the defense. That's encouraging moving forward.
Brian Smoller, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill and Downs, as we're looking back at the K-State game at Vanderbilt. Well, let's turn our attention back to the offense. And one of the things that I'm hearing quite a bit, and I'll be honest, I've been asking the same question after the game the other day, was the running back situation. Basically, it was a Jesse Ertz show. He had 24 carries, 126 yards, and a touchdown. And between Barnes and Sillman, they had just 11 carries. And the big one that people are asking me about is Justin Sillman. He comes in, he gives him a spark, three carries, 41 yards, and he did it very quickly. And then he didn't carry the ball the rest of the game. Do we know why they're not utilizing him after he ran the ball very well on those three carries?
Well, hindsight is 20/20, and I will tell you I don't know the answer to that question. And we, as you know, don't get to speak with the offensive coordinator, Dana Dimmel, about those things. But Bill Snyder alluded to, and he had the same questions after the game, just immediate reflection on why did we go away from that. Now, the coaches have spoken at length in the past about they will take what they feel is the matchup being given to them. And Vanderbilt was sold out to stop the run. They had guys up front, and you could see K-State trying, you can see the logic early on that K-State was trying to avoid all the guys in the box by swinging it to the outside.
Right.
I'm not sure that's Alex Barnes' strength, running side to side as opposed to downfield. That's what Coach Snyder alluded to after the game, that they needed to be a little bit more north and south. They got a little bit of that with that zone replay with Justin Sillman late in the game. But I'm sure the coaches – here's one thing that I have learned being on the inside after being so many years on the outside as far as the media, being on the inside, being working for the athletic department – coaches really want to win really, really badly. And they don't necessarily call plays, nor do they coach in a way that they do it because they know, well, this play isn't going to work, and therefore I'm just going to run for the sake of running it. No, they're doing it for a very well-thought-out reason in hopes of it working. Then sometimes, in hindsight, you're like, well, of course we shouldn't have done that. But I will default always to a coach will always, in his mind, think he's calling the exact right play at the exact right time based on hours and hours of research and days of scouting. So it, as a fan, it's easy to sit there and sit back in our comfortable couch or wherever we're watching the game and say, what the heck? What is this? What are we doing? Why aren't we doing this? Well, there could be a lot of reasons, including skill set of your own players, matchups, and on and on and on. That all said, Bill Snyder alluded to it in the postgame. I'm sure he'll talk about it today. K-State went away from the run game, maybe got scared off because of the passing drops, and relied too much on the ground and the game of Jesse Ertz on his legs. And in the end, you become one-dimensional, you get shut down. That's what K-State tries to do to everybody, is make them one-dimensional. And K-State got a little too one-dimensional there at the end of the game and predictable.
And let's talk about that workload for Jesse Ertz. Of course, he had the shoulder injury last year. Of course, he ripped up his knee a couple years ago. Can he continue to carry the ball 20 to 25 times a game and make it through this season?
It is somewhat of a loaded question in that, of course not. I don't think that, that's just not, no one's built to be that way, right? Unless you'd be playing a running back at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Colin Klein was as durable as anybody, and he went through a season, got banged up. Jesse Ertz got banged up last year. Michael Bishop, in his heyday when he was here, got banged up. Earl Roberson, it's just impossible to be able to survive that loss. Now, K-State does have other options there at cornerback. We haven't seen Alex Delton to this point. I suspect that we will down the road. See more Alex Delton in the game as a guy that could maybe take the ball and be that running back guy in the quarterback at the quarterback position to give Jesse a break. It wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me to see Skylar Thompson also as an option there, and not necessarily to replace Jesse, but just to give him a breather at running the ball. As many times as he has during the game, and in the end, K-State trying to find the way it worked. It worked great in the first half. I think the only concern came in the second half once it became quite apparent that Vanderbilt had adjusted at halftime to the quarterback run game. The only successful runs that Jesse had in the second half were broken pass plays that he was able to break out of the pocket. So the design runs in the second half were really the time where you felt like, man, that's not going to, it no longer seems like it's going to work. So maybe not 25 a game, but maybe you dial that back to 10 to 15. And that'll be part of the, I'm sure, self-assessment, self-scout that K-State will do this week in their off week.
The position that's most criticized or valued certainly is quarterback. And I think it was a mixed bag of results for Jesse Ertz on Saturday. We talked about how well he ran the ball and the competitor that he is. And his final passing line is very misleading. 10 of 28 for 76 yards, but he can't throw it and catch it. But how much, and he did have a couple of very questionable decisions, especially that second interception that he threw, and he knows that those were throws he can't make or he's got to learn from. And then the fourth down play, fourth and eight, and I know and this is definitely hindsight's 2020 because, it's easy when you're sitting at home, like you said, and you have a still shot of Isaiah Harris wide open over the middle, which I don't know if that was the design of the play, and that's exactly what K-State wanted, and Jesse, for some reason, didn't want to throw it or didn't feel comfortable throwing it. I would think he had to have seen him open over the middle, but people got to understand it's a split-second reaction because the game is so fast at that level. Then he rolled right, didn't have anybody open apparently, tried to tuck it and run from, in essence, 15 yards because he was 6-7 yards behind the line of scrimmage rolling right, and it was a fourth down and eight play. But how much does that impact a quarterback? And I'm sure Jesse's not going to throw his receiving core under the bus, but even though they struggled on Saturday, you still have to have the faith and confidence, and it's hard to say that after they had all the drops, to still trust your receivers to make a catch, whether it's Isaiah Harris wide open over the middle, or if it's Heath who dropped one that was a little bit behind him but should have caught at the five. How does that affect a quarterback, especially a guy like Jesse Ertz?
Well, I think it's a fair question. I think you are correct in that he'll never truthfully answer that question and throw guys under the bus. I think it's a valid question. I don't know the answer. I will tell you that it can only be human nature that you're a little bit apprehensive after seeing guys drop that many balls that were perfectly thrown. And And Jesse didn't have the greatest game either. I mean, it wasn't as if every throw was perfect. Right. You know, of those seven drops, I think Coach Snyder mentioned this yesterday as well. Or maybe it was a story that I read online. It was fair in that a couple of the drops were, they would have been spectacular catches. Now, four or five of those were in the hands, right on the numbers, perfectly thrown. There's no excuse. And there were a couple that were a little bit out of the norm that just was a little off. Could have been. You know, a guy gets banged, you know, you're getting knocked around during a football game. You're not going to be as accurate. To me, at the end of the game, Jesse looked a little bit more tentative after throwing the two interceptions. To me, the interceptions weighed more on his mind than the incompletions. That was my own personal impression watching the game, was that he did not want – I don't know if panic's the right word, but I compare it to Alex Smith with the Chiefs. You know, you get popped a couple of times, or you get hit, or you throw an interception, you become very cognizant of the fact that you do not want to put your team – in another bad spot by turning the ball over. And in this case, for Jesse, that's the end of the game. That's the game. You can't turn it over at that point.
Yeah.
And so your first reaction becomes, I got to protect the ball. Well, I'll just run. And instead of trying to look around, scan, and maybe try and make a throw, because that's where you can lead to more interceptions, a greater chance of a play going wrong and an interception happening, as opposed to a design set, three-step, five-step drop, and I'm out on my first or second option. So, to me, that was what happened on that final play. Was it wasn't so much a lack of trust in Isaiah Harris. He may have never seen Isaiah Harris because he was already, I don't want to say panicking, but already thinking, I can't turn the ball over here. I can't throw the interception. I can't force it. Once option A or B is gone, I'm trying to make something happen, and I'm not looking to throw it because I don't want to turn it over. That was my reaction to that play, which is unfortunate, as you said, because perhaps you're more poised or calm in that situation. You find Harris and the first down, if not more. It looked like he had room to run.
That's a tough spot, and it's interesting that you bring that up, because you see that, like you said, and I'm glad you brought up Alex Smith, because I see some similarities between Jesse Ertz and Alex Smith from that standpoint and other quarterbacks, is when they do make a mistake, they go into a shell a little bit. They become more conservative or ultra-conservative, and sometimes the play calling by the coaches becomes more conservative as well. And so you're trained not to make a mistake, roll out, throw it away, but then you've got to shift gears in your brain and understand the situation on every play. In that situation, fourth down and eight, even if it is picked off, you got to at least throw the ball downfield, even if it's a jump ball into the end zone. Call it a Hail Mary from the 15, because you might get pass interference, because you've got to at least give it a shot. And I know some people talked about that too, but that's part of the learning curve. I think we got to understand Jesse Ertz is not a four-year starter at quarterback, and he's still learning the position.
Yeah, that is true, although I don't think he would be one to give that as an excuse, nor would Coach Snyder.
Sure.
I think he has started more games than most quarterbacks at K-State to this point. And granted, he lost a year with the knee, but, you know, you get to this point in life and where he's been and the amount of games he's played and success that he's had, yes, he's still a kid and he's still not a pro and learning in some respects, and you hope that it's a learning lesson for the rest of this year. But you also don't want to excuse that as, hey, it was a mistake. I mean, you can't write it off. You can't just blow it off and say, well, you know, it's part of what you get with a young quarterback, because he's not. He's a redshirt senior, and I'm not trying to lay the stack on his shoulders. I think Jesse Ertz single-handedly kept K-State in the game. You're right. On fourth down, you can't throw it short. You can't run it and not get there. You have to find a way to get the ball across the first down marker and not into the end zone. And hopefully it's a lesson learned and we move on and you see K-State get some success out of this. Again, I'll go back to what we said at the very outset. Vanderbilt was a little bit better than I think even people thought going in, because of where they're in the time frame that we live in right now and the status of the SEC. Could very well see Vanderbilt near the top of that East Division. They may get a little bit on the chin here in the next couple of weeks because of who they play on the schedule, but after that it cleans up for them. And K-State, because of who they play and who they have at home, certainly has every opportunity by the time we get to the end of the year and are heading down to Stillwater to be in a position to be in the mix for the top three spots in the Big 12, still despite that Vanderbilt loss. So what you want to see is what happens on September 30th against Baylor. can K-State take what the lessons that and lick their wounds and get it corrected and be ready for Baylor in 2 weeks? The best part of all this, to kind of sum it up, put a bow on it, Wade, is what you said at the very outset of this deal. A lot of what happened, K-State was the one to blame for it in the loss, which means that it is correctable, mm-hmm. and it's stuff that you can get right before you go out on the football field again.
Well, and they got some time to correct it on the practice field, and then, as you mentioned, September 30th, a home against Baylor, on the road at Texas. Who knows which Texas team is going to show up. If it's the one that played USC, that's going to be really tough. TCU at home and then Oklahoma at home, and we know K-State hasn't had much success at home against Oklahoma. But as you mentioned, I mean, this is one of those games where, you know, losing a Vanderbilt certainly isn't the end of the season or anything like that, but for the I don't know what the percentage is of K-State faithful that thought that K-State's maybe going to win a national championship this year or make the college football playoff. And you know, here's the thing. If you it's going to be tough, but if you would run the table in the Big 12 and obviously win the Big 12 title game, even with a loss to Vanderbilt, you should be definitely in the discussion for the college football playoff. But it does make a situation to where for those that had that high expectations, I think those people are saying, okay, that's gone right now. And I would say if you put all your eggs in that basket, then you were expecting maybe too much perhaps. And now what this is to me is a wake-up call for the team. And it's if it's ever going to have a wake-up call, you want it to happen right before Big 12 season. You don't want it to happen in the middle of the Big 12 season where you lose to, say, Kansas or West Virginia, a team that maybe you should beat on the road or at home. You get it here to where now you're ready to go for the beginning of the Big 12 season with Baylor. Does that make any sense?
I think that makes perfect sense. I would say that it's admirable that people thought that K-State had a shot as a national title, and certainly you hope to go 1-0 each week, as they say, in the building over at Vanier, and win every week and have a chance to win and be a sleeper run for the college football playoff. But realistically, listen, how many Division One and how many just Power Five football teams believe they have a shot at the college football playoff at the beginning of the year?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, close to 100, it may be less than that, but only four get there. So it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard to get there. And the path to get there is not set in stone in week three of the college football season. As you said, there are a lot of games left on K-State's schedule, a lot of games against very good opponents. Who knows what happens out of this loss? If this is something, we're sitting in November, mid-November, and K-State's got only one loss, and it's Vanderbilt, and all they talk about is how that was the turning point of their season. Yeah. Trust me, no one will keep K-State out of the conversation for the college football playoff or the Big 12 title. In the end, I believe going in, once the Big 12 out of that championship game, that the conference, the Big 12 was in a very good position based on the three teams that they felt like were the best three in the league coming into this year: Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and K-State in no particular order. Based on having those three teams at the top of your division by the end of the year, whoever won the Big 12 championship was going to be in the college football playoff, and I still think that'll be the case. I don't think we have the SEC type of hierarchy this year where it's just one team and everybody else. If anything, if I'm the SEC, I might be a little concerned, but at the end of the year, of course it's Alabama, but you have one team and everybody else. If you get a number 25 Georgia in there against Alabama in the championship of the SEC, and Alabama goes down, all of a sudden, do they have enough cachet based on what they did during the season to be in the college football playoff? Probably, because they're Alabama. But in other conferences, if that were the Big 12, probably not. I don't think you'll have that problem this year. I think Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, K-State will all be, as long as they take care of their business, in position that whoever wins that championship game is going to be in. So for K-State, the goal now, be in the top two. Find a way to get into that Big 12 championship game and see if you can't punch your ticket.
Yep, well put. All right, you ready for off-the-wall question, Brian?
I'm ready.
All right, so I understand from reading Facebook that, because that's where I go for all the accurate information. Facebook provides it for me. that and Twitter, you know, it's rock,
sure.
Ironclad, you know.
Yep.
But I noticed that you and your family went to a Royals game. I think it was Star Wars Day. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. So your off-the-wall question is, if you were a character, a Star Wars character, which character would you be cast as and why?
Well, growing up, my brother and I, we played Star Wars all the time, as I'm sure other 40-year-old kids of the 70s like myself were. When Empire Strikes Back came out and Return of the Jedi, it was my favorite movies growing up. And my brother was a little bit younger than me. I was a little bit older, so naturally I was Han Solo and he was Luke Skywalker. So I would be Han Solo, just love the swashbuckling, sort of, you know, gonna just say whatever he thinks. Don't we wish we all could be that guy?
Yeah.
Where you just say whatever and you get carte blanche because everyone writes you off. Well, that's just Han.
Mm-hmm.
That's just Solo popping off. You know, I mean, that's the dream of being able to be that guy, be super cool and flying around in the Millennium Falcon and have a big dog named Chewie or whatever next to you that's your pal the whole time. So, Han Solo, I think, would be the one. The funny part is my son, who was the reason we went to the Star Wars game of the K, huge Star Wars fan, he has latched on to Luke pretty hard. And it's an interesting dynamic because we'll play Star Wars now, and I'm reprising the role of Han Solo because I got to be Han. He has to be Luke, so uh-huh. I got to be Han and or Darth Vader. So it's a little bit of the same stuff here, even 30 years later.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I was just telling my wife just the other day. Gosh, I wish I could say exactly what I think all the time, but it would get me in so much trouble. And it's a good thing that I can't, or at least I have a filter, I guess.
Yeah, you know, people that are able to do that. Have admiration for, but you're like, man, I couldn't do that. I enjoy my employment too much. I enjoy respect from others, but people like Han Solo or Travis Kelce, they can do it. So whatever.
Yeah,
right?
I like it. Yeah, way to throw Kelce in there at the end. That was well played.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it. Oh, man. Hey, buddy, we appreciate the time as always. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you again later on during the K-State football season.
Love it. Talk to you later, Wade.
Take care. That's Brian Smoller, and does a great job for Kansas State University. And you can hear him on the radio, see him on TV. He does a wonderful job. He's our guest today on the Sports Ticket.